Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a hopefully brief episode of Sour Graps. This is my third podcast recording this weekend. God damn you, Sonros Sapp. Not really. He asked me to help out because we're trying to bridge the gap. There's a lot less content for us to cover. I don't know if you've noticed. So we're trying to give you guys as much stuff to listen to and look at as possible. So he asked me to do a couple extra things, which I was all too happy to do. So I'll be doing a little, I have done a little Firefly Funhouse deep dive, which will be premiering this weekend. Might actually already be up at the time that you are watching this. So go watch that as well. That also features a retro epic triggered rant from WrestleMania 33, where I yelled a lot about projector worms. It was a fun time. And then, of course, Sean Ross Sapp made me do a review of The Big Show on Netflix, which is terrible. It's an awful, horrible, abysmal, disgustingly bad sitcom. So I reviewed that. That'll be, I believe, premiering next week, but it's already in the can. So let's talk about SmackDown that happened last night. What happened? I watched it. I don't remember. So I'm going to look at these notes and see if that helps me. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski. Everything sucks. Let's talk about it. So Braun opened the show. Braun's the Universal Champion now, having been unceremoniously plucked out of not being on the card at all. And then, hey, something happened. We'll never say what on the air, but Roman can't be facing Goldberg for the Universal Championship. You want to do it? Now, Braun was on the bump or the jump or the beep. I don't know what it's called. Stupid thing that they do on social media. And they interviewed him, and he said that he had basically come to terms with the fact that he wasn't going to be on Mania. And he was driving in his car from Florida. I think from Florida, from North Carolina. He's from North Carolina. I don't know if he lives in Florida now. Whatever. He was driving, he said, 21 hours to Wisconsin, where I am. But up in the North Woods of Wisconsin. So even further up in the frozen tundra, because he has land up there, and he was going to stay there and hang out with his family up there. So he had driven 21 hours, and he gets a call saying, "Hey, we need you. We're sending a private plane. Be on it in the morning. You're flying back here." And then he did, and then he wrestled Goldberg, and then he became champion. And there was apparently talk about keeping the belt on Goldberg because life is a fucking joke. But thank God, Goldberg, who, according to the same reports, was the guy who said, "Nah, I'm not laying down for the fat guy in the mask in Saudi Arabia at Sands of Time," is the same guy, Goldberg, who said at Mania, "Nah, I'm not signing a contract for any more dates. This is it. I'm done." So thanks, Goldberg. One, for insisting on taking the title off of Bray, because as I said in my Firefly Funhouse match deep dive, if Bray was still the champion, there's no way we would be getting Cena, Wyatt, Firefly Funhouse match, you know, quote unquote. What we got, that amazing short film that retconned out of existence all of the terrible things about John Cena and winked him into another dimension, that never would have happened if Bray had still been the champion. I don't know what they would have done instead, but that wouldn't have happened. So thanks, Goldberg, for that. And also thanks for Goldberg for saying, "Nah, I don't want to do it anymore," and just putting over Braun Strong so you can get the hell off my television screen, hopefully forever, until the next Saudi bag drops out of the sky on your lawn. Won't that be fun? Anyway, Braun beat Goldberg, so he's the champion now, and he comes out and he talks about how
they say that when opportunity knocks on your door, you answer it.
Well, they say opportunity knocks but once. I don't know. I've never heard anybody say the thing you just said, Braun, but okay, whatever. Maybe they say that wherever the hell you're from, North Carolina, Florida, or Wisconsin. They don't say it here in Wisconsin. I would have heard it. Anyway, he was interrupted by Shinsuke Nakamura, his old rival, the guy he beat for the Intercontinental title, and the guy who helped Sami Zayn procure the Intercontinental title. That was never really resolved, the whole Sami and Braun thing. They're resolving it, kind of, between Shinsuke and Braun, but it's weird. Like, spoiler alert, this little segment leads to Shinsuke Nakamura challenging Braun for the Universal title in a match that happens last night. Cesaro tries to get involved and attack Braun, but Braun sees it coming, but he's distracted long enough for Shinsuke Nakamura to kick him. Anyway, later in the night, Braun successfully defends the title. I know, shocker. Against Shinsuke Nakamura. Which is one more successful Universal title defense than he ever had as Intercontinental title holder. So, it's interesting. I mean, it's a step up. It's good. I don't know if they're ever, like, if they'll ever mention, like, it's possible, Braun, that could be the only IC title he ever wins. And he'll go into the Hall of Fame one day because, you know, he'll be like a 6-time Universal champ. And he could easily book him correctly and he'd be a surefire Hall of Famer by the time he retires. But they'll go that he'd go in the Hall of Fame and they would never, ever say former Intercontinental champion. Because people will go, what? When? Yeah, for like, you know, 7 days or whatever it was. It was quick. What's I saying? All right, Nakamura challenged Strowman to a match. Strowman accepted it. Nakamura was, you know, suitably aggressive. It was fine. Okay. Cool. I mean, it's a... pardon me. I'm tired. I recorded so many podcasts this weekend, guys. It's a suitable first defense for Braun. Shinsuke is not being built for anything, so losing to Braun doesn't hurt him. Whatever. Elias sang a stupid song about King Corbin from the same spot where he was pushed off the thing. Elias talked about being in... He beat King Corbin with a roll up at Mania in a match that I have completely forgotten if it ever even happened. And they were talking about what to do now with Elias. I don't know. I don't know. Is he going to beat King Corbin again? Probably. Money in the Bank's coming up. I guess Elias probably wants to be part of that. He can, for all I care. I don't know. I mean, is it people from each brand, or is it only SmackDown? Because later on, we're going to find out there's going to be a qualifying match. It's going to be Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro in a qualifying match for the Money in the Bank ladder match, which is apparently still happening on May 10th. Excuse me. And another one, I believe it's Naomi versus Dana Brooke. So either SmackDown gets both ladder matches or they're doing 3 from Raw and 3 from SmackDown. I'm not sure. Cool. Whatever. I'm done with Elias. I'm done. I don't care about your stupid songs. And I care even less that they're about King Corbin. You know what's hilarious? They're doing a 25th anniversary thing, a celebration of Triple H starting in 2 weeks. And the fact, I mean, this was probably planned already at some point. It's the 25th anniversary of Triple H in WWE, which is a big milestone. He's a major star on a major face of the company now on the business side of it. So they were always planning this something. But I think they're doing it specifically this way because it eats into time. They have to do less stuff on the shows. That's good for them. But I mean, later on they have a video package where like, we're going to revisit the history of Jeff Hardy over the next couple of weeks because we're trying to chew up some time and we've got these people who are still on staff who edit videos for us. So we're going to do that. They're just trying to chew up some time, and I do not blame them, but it is funny that they're going to honor Triple H at an empty arena. That's funny to me. The guy who got roundly booed for a lot of his career. But now is, you know, supposedly Papa H. Everyone loves him. I go back and forth. I do appreciate the stuff that he's done for NXT. And also, I'm kind of done with watching him do plotting 30-minute matches every now and then. So, Dolph Ziggler and Sonya Deville, are they dating? I don't know. I don't know what they're doing with this thing. But they came down to the ring to like say, hey, you guys are sure to apologize. They're yelling at Michael Cole. Corey Graves is back, by the way. Hooray. I've tuned all of that shit out. But he's they're yelling at them about – I missed something. Oh, I missed that. Okay. That's later in the night. It's fine. Sonya Deville and Dolph Ziggler are yelling about how they know what's best for Mandy Rose. And then Tucker shows up and he shows Instagram photos. Remember how Ziggler showed Instagram photos to Otis of Dolph and Mandy canoodling? Well, Tucker is showing Instagram photos to Dolph of Otis and Mandy working out in a parking lot. And Otis has a lot of bananas because they're high in potassium and he likes to make his kitten happy. A kitten? I believe that's the term that Tucker used. That Mandy is Otis's kitten. All right. But he says, you know, my Otis and Mandy aren't here, but I am, and you have this unfinished business because the week prior, Dolph tried to murder Tucker with a set of ring steps. So this match, Tucker beats the brakes off of Ziggler for the entire match, beats him to within an inch of his life, and then Ziggler hits one super kick and wins. Hooray for booking. But I will say this. I do believe this firmly. I think that Tucker has a much higher long-term ceiling than Otis. I think Otis has one thing. I think he's very good at it. And people love him. But he's a bushwhacker. That's what he is. He's a bushwhacker. He's one guy. He's a big fat guy. Maybe he's two bushwhackers in one body. That's how big and fat he is. But his whole thing is like, I don't know how long you can. I like Otis, but that's all he does. He talks weird and his eyes go everywhere. He's very shifty glances and he's got a big beard and he's fat. He's got greasy hair. I don't know. Like, there's not a lot you can do with that. Tucker can actually talk on the mic. Like, he's good. He's decent. He's only going to get better. A few weeks ago, he had a great one of those, you know, backstage WWE.com exclusive. It's exclusive to WWE.com, except we also put it on YouTube and Twitter. One of those where he's talking to somebody backstage and he has a great monologue, about how much he loves Otis, and how much he would die for him and all that kind of stuff. It was a great, it was really true. It felt right, you know? Like, there's always these guys, the best friends that you have that you would go to the mat for no matter what. And the way he delivered the monologue, it was great. And then it was stupid, thankless stuff they asked him to do last night. Like, hey, look at my boy eating a banana. Potassium for his kitten. But he committed to it. And if you commit to something, it's always going to be better committed to it than not. So, and then he can do some really good stuff for a guy his size. He's very big, but he's athletic, very athletic. His moonsault's actually pretty good looking. I think that you can turn him heel whenever you want. Have him decide he doesn't want to be a part of Otis's shtick anymore. You could do that. He's also a really great white meat babyface. Isn't I'm saying, like, if you break Otis off of Tucker and you break them apart, Otis just has the one thing. He's a fat comedy character. I don't know that he could do much else. I think Tucker can do whatever you ask of him. I do. In a couple of years, with more TV time under his belt, I feel like he could do whatever you ask of him. I think that time will tell. I think I'm going to say 5 years. In 5 years, I think Tucker will be maybe not a bigger star, but a more well-rounded performer for this company. And if they were to split them up, or if they were to release Heavy Machinery, I feel like Tucker has other places that he could go and work and be something completely different than what he is in WWE. But Otis would have to go somewhere and be Otis. There's nothing else he can do. There's nothing else that I've seen him do. I haven't seen any nuance to him. So again, I still like Otis. I like the stuff he does. I think he's very good at what he does, but he does one thing. And I think Tucker can do multiple things. There's my unpopular opinion of the night. Miz and Morrison, I think these guys are great. They came out to do the dirt sheet. They sit in the chairs. They make jokes about what happened at WrestleMania. They were going to perform their song, Hey, Hey, Ho, Ho. They do part of it. It's really bad. It's a really bad rap song. But they were interrupted by the Usos. And they were complained about The Miz wasn't in the championship in WrestleMania. He says, well, hey, man, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm the only one who in history to ever successfully defend the tag team titles from my couch. That was a funny line. And I feel like a lot of us are trying to successfully defend our own personal tag team titles from our own personal couch these days. That's literally for me. I just sit on my couch most of the time. And defending the titles, I guess, is, I don't know, whatever video game I'm trying to beat. This metaphor kind of fell apart, but you understand what I'm saying, right? I mean, we're all kind of, you gotta do whatever you can when you're stuck at home. What did Miz do when he was stuck at home? He retained the tag team titles. Kind of. Anyway, so the New Day also appear, and it was the New Day's idea, I guess. They talked to somebody in the back, and they said, well, since one half of every tag team was in a triple threat singles ladder match for the tag team titles, let's do another one with the other half of the tag teams. So even though Miz is not cleared to compete this week, he will be next week. So Big E versus The Miz versus Jey Uso in a ladder match next week in front of no fans, not on WrestleMania, and they'll still try to kill each other because they do that stuff. I mean, it'll be great. It'll be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see Big E in the match. But I can't say it's not ill-advised. But anyway, I just hope that Big E and Jey Uso are as much fun talking shit as Kofi and Jimmy were at WrestleMania. Seriously, though, a triple threat singles match for the tag team titles isn't crazy enough to do it once. We got to do it twice. I mean, the turnabout's fair play, I understand. You know, one half of the tag team's got to do it with the other half, but still, that's a crazy thing to think. Triple threat singles match for the tag team titles doesn't make any sense, but awesome still. You know, it's not awesome? The Forgotten Sons from NXT. Now, if you don't watch NXT, why don't you watch NXT? It's a much better product than SmackDown. I know most people don't watch NXT because of the ratings, but still, you should. And you should watch it more now because the Forgotten Sons aren't there anymore. Ha Bing! The Forgotten Sons are a thinly veiled white supremacist biker gang consisting of former Marines. I think that's the aesthetic. The thinly veiled white supremacist thing is my own deal, mostly because Gunner, who plays Jackson Riker, is there's nothing thinly veiled about that dude's Twitter. Like he is all in for the whole MAGA shit, and a lot of people are. I will say that. I'll just say a lot of people are, but he really is. I don't know the politics of Blake and Cutler, who were the actual guys who wrestle. Riker just stands there and looks intimidating. Now, for a while, when they were in NXT, I thought that Riker was the leader of the triumvirate, but he never wrestles and he never talks. So really, it's like, it's a tag team and their big dumb guy friend who's like their security guard, which is a faction, a kind of faction I've never seen before. Shudder to think they could win the titles. What am I saying? It's Vince. Vince's favorite show of all time, apparently, is Sons of Anarchy. So, these guys are going to be champions by the fall because Vince, and will be able to help himself. So they debut against a team of masked Mexicans, because there's one thing that Jackson Riker hates. It's a mass Mexican. So they beat the Luchas Party. It's Metalik and let's say Dorado. Metalik is great. Dorado's always very good too. But I really think Metalik should have had a better chance at something in WWE after they signed him. Anyway, they beat him up. They beat him pretty good. There was nothing for them to do in NXT. I like NXT, and I hate these guys. I don't hate them. They're fine. They do fine. I think Cutler and Blake are fine. I hate Jackson Riker. I think he's useless in a wrestling ring. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't add anything to the faction outside of it. Plus the other thing about him personally that I don't love. I can't wait for them to start doing these things live again and for one of the hot mics to catch Jackson Riker calling Big E the N-word under his breath. That'll be fun. The Forgotten Sons got called up. People were like, why wasn't it the Undisputed Era, they should get called up. Like, no, God, no, please, no. No. Leave them in NXT where they can do good things. Bring up the Forgotten Sons to the cesspool that is SmackDown. So, oh, did I missed it. I missed something. I skipped a whole thing. I'm so sorry. First match of the night, obviously, was the Women's Tag Team Championship match. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross defeated the Kabuki Warriors. I don't know. Are the Kabuki Warriors a Raw tag team, or are they a SmackDown act? I don't know. Kairi Sane got punched in the face, and then Nikki Cross hit her neck breaker, swing a neck breaker on her, and they win. Match is fine. These girls were really laying into each other. Alexa Bliss has improved a lot over the past few years. Asuka had a match versus Liv Morgan on Raw and won. They had a tag team match versus the Alexa and Nikki on SmackDown and lost. I don't know what's next for the Kabuki Warriors. I love them. And my pitch has been for several months to bring Io Shirai from NXT and let her do the exact same act with Asuka and Kairi Sane. Let Asuka be more of a singles competitor, and Kairi Sane and Io Shirai reform the Sky Pirates, but now they're heels, and let them all hang out together, yelling in Japanese and laughing at each other's awesome Japanese jokes. But Asuka can transition more into a singles competitor, and if they were to become tag champs again, they could freebird the titles. That's my pitch. I think that's very possible because I think Io Shirai will have a match with Charlotte Flair since Io Shirai won that women's ladder match, number one contenders match. She will have a match with Charlotte Flair. It will be a very good match, and then Io Shirai will tap out because that is how you book a Charlotte match. Basically, it's going to be the Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte match from Mania, except with like a ton more missile drop kicks and moonsaults that actually land Charlotte. But I think that might be her swan song in NXT. And then she gets brought up and teamed with Asuka and Kairi Sane. And the thing that I want to happen will happen. I'm hoping that's the case. Anyway, later in the night, the champs, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, were approached by Carmella and Dana Brooke, who said, we should have a match. And because in WWE, if you've never teamed together, you can get a tag team title match. Just ask Angel Garza and Austin Theory. You can get on not only one match, but if you lose that match, you will get a rematch of that match the next night. They broke up Fire and Desire, Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose. So I guess SmackDown needs a new women's tag team. So their first match together should probably be a championship match, right? Oh no, wrong? Oh, okay. Yes, you're right. That is wrong. Maybe Carmella and Dana Brooke should have to beat somebody before they have an opportunity to become champions. I'm just spitballing here, though. Anyway, they asked for a championship match, and Alexa Bliss demurred. She did not seem to want to give them one. But Dana Brooke's like, hey, you guys think you can beat everybody, but then obviously you can beat us, right? And so Alexa and Nikki conferred, and Nikki apparently convinced Alexa to accept the match, and therefore next week, Carmella and Dana Brooke are a tag team, and they're really bad at giving each other high fives. And then They give each other a high five, and they're really bad at dancing. Two. But there you go. Bayley and Sasha Banks cut a promo about how they're awesome. And they are. They're very, very good at what they do. But they were interrupted by Tamina. And Tamina was eliminated in the Fatal 5-Way elimination match. She was eliminated first, so she says that nobody beat her. Which takes some minor mental gymnastics. She is saying that no one person can beat me. The other four women did gang up on her, do all their finishers to her, and then pin her all together. So, yeah, I suppose that's true. I suppose that you weren't defeated at WrestleMania, even though you absolutely were, but you kind of weren't, since no one person can defeat you. Okay, Tamina, you win. So it is funny, though, that Tamina can go away for a while, have won absolutely nothing, and yet Bayley and Sasha still pretend to be afraid of her. They're not pretending, really. You know, they're acting, but it's weird. Tamina is like this world beater when she's literally beaten nobody in the world. But anyway, there's a fun part where Sasha is doing the hold me back thing, and Bayley is. It's a very funny. It's a very funny image. But Bayley says, "You want a title match? Okay, Tamina, you can have a title match if you beat Sasha Banks next week." So this then Sasha does not like that very much at all. So this furthers the rift that is widening between Bayley and Sasha. I wonder if we'll ever, ever, ever get that match. Sasha versus Bayley. I wonder. I don't know. I do know that it's almost a guarantee that Tamina will beat Sasha next week. So that'll be fun. It'll probably be because Sasha and Bayley have a miscommunication, or like Bayley there's a ref bump and Bayley tries to hit Tamina with the belt but ends up hitting Sasha, something like that. Sheamus is around. Remember him from before, from the before times, from the long, long ago? We haven't seen him since the world ended. But he defeated a guy named Cal Bloom, who I am told is the son of a guy who used to wrestle like on Nitro occasionally, and maybe in WWE. Like, I'm not sure what that guy's first name was. But anyway, Cal Bloom got beat up pretty good by Sheamus. What's going on with old Mr. G, old Chad Gable? Is he smart enough to stay the hell away from Florida? I would be. Then there was even that special look at Jeff Hardy, and it did really feel like, hey, everybody, I know the other guy's in the news because he's doing stuff at the other place that we can't talk about, but we have a Hardy brother too, and he's better. And here's a bunch of stuff, a video package that shows how much better our guy is than the other guy. It did feel a lot like that. So Braun Strowman did defeat Shinsuke Nakamura, him with a power slam. It's fine. It's a fine match. Whatever. It's a SmackDown taped match, but Braun looked good. He was able to counter a running. It was probably going to be a Kinshasa. Nakamura ran at him, and he did like a tilt-a-whirl into the power slam. So that was good. I liked that a lot. Then the best thing that happened on SmackDown happened. Braun was interrupted by Firefly Funhouse. Bray Wyatt made some jokes about John Cena, and then, hey, Braun, so good to see you. I'm so proud of you for being the champion. And then another puppet exists in the Firefly Funhouse now. Not really a puppet. It's the Head Lantern that talks to Bray, and Bray's like, no, shut up, don't. It's the thing that makes Bray crazy. And I think that's an interesting use of that, the Head Lantern. Remember how we were talking about how they didn't want to put it on the YouTube video? Because in SummerSlam. SummerSlam, like, they had the full video of him walking down to the ramp playing that his creepy new reworked theme, and he was carrying the Head Lantern, and people thought, oh my God, kids are going to have nightmares. Let's not include any shots of that thing he's carrying. We'll not include the shots of that in the YouTube video. And that was like, because we didn't want kids to be upset. And now, like, on friggin' network TV, it's a close-up of the severed head. I just think that's really funny how things have changed. Speaking of things changing, Bray's conceit is that Braun, a long time ago, he says, he was part of the family, the Wyatt family. You turned your back on me. I brought you out of the swamp and I gave you a home. And you turned your back on me. No, not really. They did the draft. And in the draft, the Wyatt family was split up. Bray went to SmackDown with Luke. And Braun went to Raw, where he squashed James Ellsworth's for a living. Wasn't Braun's fault. That's a bit of a rewriting of history, but that's fine. That's kind of what Bray's deal is now. But he said, you turned your back on me. And I will forgive you if you just say you're sorry. And Braun, of course, I'm not playing your games, Bray. Okay, well, you know, you've been trying to get these hands, but I guess you don't want to learn these manners. So he asks all the puppets if they should forgive him, and Mercy says he's too big, and Huskus says he smells like a Schweinschwinkter, a pig butt, and pig anus, I suppose. Yeah. And then Abigail, the witch, says his beard is possessed. Sure, why not? But the big thing I do like a lot of it is that he says that you have something I want. I want the title back. I don't want to see Bray in the title picture again. That's going to ruin everything, because The Fiend, A, as I've said, shouldn't be having matches at all. B, The Fiend can't lose. He's not allowed to lose. He's The Fiend. You did this with Goldberg. We're not doing this anymore. No. Bray can lose. Maybe they'll have a match between Bray and Braun. But The Fiend can't lose. So if The Fiend beats Braun, then we're just waiting around for Roman to show back up from his absolutely legitimate quarantine vacation. And then he'll beat The Fiend. We're just waiting around for The Fiend to lose if The Fiend becomes champion. If The Fiend isn't champion and he can fuck with whoever he wants to fuck with, that's a lot more fun and unpredictable. So I don't want to see Braun versus Bray for the title. But I do want to see Bray versus Braun, though, because there's a great, great moment. Gave me chills. Bray's such a great actor. Because all the stuff he does when he's giggling as the kids' TV show host. And they say, he says, as one circle closes, another begins again.
I brought you into this world, Braun, so it looks like I'm going to have to be the one to take you out. And the way he says it and the look on his face gave me chills.
Now, that's an old thing. I brought you into this world, and I'm going to take you out. I believe I first heard that on an episode of The Cosby Show. Where, you know, Dr. Huxtable, who we would find out many years later was not a very good doctor, he says to his own son, to Theo, because I think it's because Theo wants to be a bus driver. So Theo wants to be a bus driver, and so Dr. Huxtable threatens to murder his own son. It's a very, in retrospect, maybe we should have seen the whole Cosby thing coming, since he reacts to his son wanting to be a bus driver with threats of murder. Perhaps we should have known. Anyway, the joke of "I brought you in this world, I can take you out," as jokey as that isn't, but has been used as a joke, it's a cliche. But the way Bray said it didn't feel like a cliche. And then he says, "Bye, bye," and as he's going away, but then Braun stops him and says,
"Hey, wait, don't go. I want to say something. Whenever you're ready, I'm ready to let him in, let you in, whatever it is that I said."
And then Braun goes, "Bye, see you later." So he's making fun of the whole thing, and Bray just sits there glowering at him. This has the potential to be so good, but you just know it's going to be so bad. I wish I wasn't a cynic, guys. I wish I wasn't jaded, but I'm usually right. In this case, and in a lot of cases, most cases, because I predict things that are going to be bad, I'm always happy when I'm wrong. Except for me predicting that Io Shirai will get called up and join this and reform the Sky Pirates, but as heels, and she and Kairi Sane and Asuka will regain the tag team titles and freebird them. I am predicting that. Not really. They'll never let them do that. You know why? Because everything sucks. I did the tagline early. Sorry. This has been SmackDown. This has been Sour Graps. I have been your host, Alex Pawlowski. Buy my merch. Shop.fightful.com. Fellow by the name of Ray. I believe Ray Callahan. Bought a shirt and tagged me in a tweet with a picture of him wearing the shirt. Anybody out there who's bought a shirt, do that. Tag me in a tweet. I'm at Alex Sour Graps. I want to see you guys wearing Sour Graps shirts. Ray, are you the only one who bought one besides my wife? That's my wife's shirt sitting up there above my head. It's got a picture of me. Well, not really. It's my face artistically rendered on a purple fruit. It's a lot of fun. It's a conversation starter at parties. Oh, no, wait. We live in the end times where there are no parties. Gosh, man, really, everything sucks.